The month of June is a time when many communities host LGBT Pride events, including Lexington later this month. At the beginning of June this year, there are a number of legal issues potentially affecting lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons in Kentucky. Among them, the case of a judge who decided to recuse himself from participation in adoptions involving same-sex couples. Fayette County Judge Lucinda Masterton weighed in on that topic in a story that aired on WEKU.
If we didn't have same-sex couples willing to be foster parents and adoptive parents, especially for older children, we would be in serious trouble.
On this week's Eastern Standard, LGBT legal issues, we're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us now, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week our topic is LGBT legal issues affecting Kentuckians. And with me in the studio, we have three guests. First up, Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. He currently serves on the Penny Ryle Christian Community Board and previously served on the Trigg County Hospital Corporation Board, also the Trigg County Fiscal Court as magistrate. And you've been here once or twice before, Richard.
I have, and it's good to be back on again, John.
Thank you for making the drive up from Cadiz?
From Cadiz, Kentucky, about a good 3.5-hour drive.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate you making the effort to do here. Also, another guest who's been here with us before is Chris Hartman. And Chris is the first director of Louisville's two-decades-old fairness campaign and a steering committee member of Kentucky's statewide fairness coalition. And again, been here two or three times in the past. Thank you so much.
Great to be back, John. Thank you.
Glad to have you. And also, Sam Markison. And Sam is Associate Professor of Law at the Brandeis School of Law, the University of Louisville. Professor Markison teaches, among other subjects, employment, discrimination, constitutional law, and disability law. I understand, Sam, you were involved in preparing Kentucky attorneys on marriage equality issues. Well, you might want to tell us about that. You're also one of the co-signers of the complaint that was filed against Judge Nance.
All correct, and happy to be here, John.
Thank you so much. Pleased to meet you and glad to have you with us in the studio. Folks, why don't you help us out with the background? Actually, let me tell our listeners that we are interested in hearing from you during the program. Write to us at any time, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST or pick up the phone and call. It'll be a few minutes before we would put a call on the air, but the number is 800-621-8890. Let's talk a little bit about the background. We've been talking about this issue of Judge Nance recusing himself from cases, adoption cases involving same-sex couples. We want to talk about some other legal issues that might affect LGBT persons in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Actually, let's create a little list of those possible topics that we may discuss. First, the judge attempting to recuse himself from adoptions. What does that mean?
Well, I think only Judge Nance can answer that. But what seems clear is that his desire is to not do any LGBT adoptions, to recuse himself from any potential LGBT adoption in Barron and Metcalf counties. And what that's done is set up a series of discriminatory, policies that first have not been approved by the Kentucky Supreme Court. Chief Justice Minton denied Judge Nance's request for a local rule allowing him to do that. But for all we've heard is that his order is sort of still in effect, that folks are following it in Barron and Metcalf counties. Another judge, Alexander, family court judge, the only other family court judge, has agreed to do it. But, you know, we've got this situation where he's clearly exemplified LGBT discrimination. We believe he can no longer be impartial in any cases that involve LGBT folks or their family members. And that's where we are now. And that's why we worked with the ACLU of Kentucky and ACLU National and Lambda Legal and Professor Markison over here to file a Judicial Conduct Commission complaint.
Let's talk specifically. Let's talk about our the viewpoints on this issue, if we're clear on the facts, if we're comfortable with that. About some other issues, the Kim Davis lawsuit. There's a lawsuit still out there, and there was a ruling about a month ago, early in May, saying that the lawsuit filed by one same-sex couple against Kim Davis, what, for
damages? Right.
What were those damages? What's that all about?
Well, we don't know exactly yet. I don't think it's going to be a huge lawsuit, but yes, it continues to move forward. Richard, did you have something?
Well, I wanted to put a finer point on what Chris said, and I think the big issue that we're going to talk about is Judge Mitchell Nance and whether or not he had the right to recuse himself from cases involving same-sex parented adoptions. I think we need to make a distinction between animus or discriminatory actions towards an individual and Judge Nance's conviction that the best place for children is in married heterosexual two-parented households. It might be a fine line or a small point, but I think that what Mitchell Nance said was that he cannot in good conscience place children in those same-sex parented households. And I don't think you necessarily have to have animus towards an individual in the LGBT community as much as he has that conviction that kids just do better in married two-parent families. That's what social science says. In fact, there was a study that came out in 2012, Mark Regnerus from
the
University of Texas, sociologist, who found that children do better after they become adults if they have a married biological mother and a biological father raising them. And so Judge Nance's position, I don't think, is unreasonable. And I don't think if you boil it down to just a discriminatory action that he's being bigoted or discriminatory, I think you're missing the larger point that his conviction based on evidence and based on, the conviction that kids do better in married two-parent families, I think that's a reasonable position.
It's not a reasonable position at all, with all due respect. Every judge has a responsibility upon taking an oath of office, and that oath of office includes obeying the code of conduct that all judges are required to obey. And if a judge cannot impartially apply the law to all litigants who come before that judge can't serve on the bench, period. And it's a perfectly honorable thing to do for a judge to resign his or her office because they can't do that. If Judge Nance, because of his beliefs, which I quarrel with, but I think he's entitled to have them, cannot apply the law because he disagrees with it based on a matter of conscience, then his responsibility is not to recuse himself from a series of cases. His responsibility is not to be a judge anymore.
Are there other cases where this might apply? I'm trying to think of, for instance, a judge who might have an opposition to the death penalty.
In fact, that happened very recently in Arkansas, where a judge was removed and has been brought up on judicial misconduct charges because of his opposition to the death penalty, and he allegedly would not apply the death penalty because of his religious scruples against the death penalty. And mm-hmm. just like Judge Nance is facing judicial misconduct charges because a judge's ultimate responsibility, unlike a private citizen has much more freedom to apply his or her religious conscience than a judge does. A judge has a responsibility to apply the law faithfully and impartially to all citizens who come before him or her, who come before that bench. And that includes gay and lesbian citizens. And if a gay and lesbian person wants to adopt, they have the right under the law, as decided by the Supreme Court, whatever any of us may think of those of the Supreme Court's decisions on marriage equality and of the right of a gay and lesbian couple to marry and have all of the rights as a married couple, that includes the right to adopt.
Let me ask this. Does a judge have a responsibility to disclose his or her views on such matters up front as Judge Nance has done? Or can we not be in agreement that there are plenty of judges out there who disagree with the death penalty, but they've never stated that publicly, that they're going to just not hear death penalty cases? There are other judges apparently who are hearing adoption cases involving same-sex couples. They may be opposed to it, but they're hearing the cases, and we don't even know the bias because they haven't said it out loud.
I think there is an irony here. And the irony here is that Judge Nance has been honest. And I commend Judge Nance for being honest about not just his beliefs, but the fact that his beliefs are so deeply held that they prevent him from being able to apply the law impartially as it is his duty to do. And yes, a judge who's in that position does have a duty to disclose, but has a duty to do much more than that. That's the minimal duty, and it goes much further than that. So disclosure, as you say, in a death penalty case or in a case where there is a bias not only against the law but against the particular litigants who have come before that court, the duty of that judge goes much further than that.
John, and Sam, you mentioned the law, and you know, I think you're referring mostly to legal cases that have given us a new definition of marriage. But we do have laws in Kentucky. You look at the state constitution that protects the religious rights of individuals and the conscience rights. So we're protected there. Here's what it says regarding the right of conscience. It says, no human authority shall in any case whatever control or interfere with the rights of conscience. That's in Section 5 of the Constitution. And then also it says about regarding religious freedom, nor shall the civil rights, privileges, or capacities of any person be taken away or in any wise diminished or enlarged on account of his belief or disbelief of any religious tenet, dogma, or teaching. And as I understand religious liberty, it's the ability to live in the public arena according to your convictions. It's the freedom to conform your life to the truth as you see it and to live your life in front of God according to that truth.
Our complaint against Judge Nance is very simple. He's violated the canon of judicial conduct, which prohibits explicitly judges from manifesting bias or prejudice based on sexual orientation. I think it is inarguable that Judge Nance has exhibited a bias against LGBT parents, and that is a clear-cut violation of the Judicial Conduct Code. And so he should be removed from the bench.
I understand what you're saying, but you said sexual orientation. Is it based on somebody's sexual orientation, or is it based on a sociological arrangement? And we're talking about family and children.
When Judge Nance says, quote, that under no circumstance would the best interests of the child be promoted by the adoption by a practicing homosexual. He doesn't say a married gay couple. He says by a practicing homosexual, he's indicating clear animus and bias against LGBT people.
Let me comment something I should have said 10 minutes ago, which is that we repeatedly reached out to Judge Nance's office, and I know other media have done so. But I want to make sure that it's very clear that we invited Judge Nance to participate in this conversation. Finally, we got a reply. One of our producers received a reply saying, Judge Nance has no comment at this time. I want to make sure we make that very clear, that we've made an effort to have the judge represented in this conversation. We're going to go ahead and take a short break. We're going to continue talking about this issue of a Judge Nance who, let's see, the counties that he serves are
Barron
and Metcalf counties. Okay, he's actually based out of Glasgow, I believe, recusing himself from participating in adoption cases involving same-sex couples. We want to talk about other LGBT legal issues. June is a month when a lot of places observe pride celebrations and events, including Lexington, and we're interested in talking about these issues on this week's show. Your questions, your comments, your personal stories, WEKU Eastern Standard @gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. Give us a call. We'll get you on the air, and you can interact with our guests, Richard Nelson, Chris Hartman, and Sam Markison. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. We're talking about LGBT legal issues, issues that may affect Kentuckians during the coming year or that are affecting Kentuckians right now. Richard Nelson is Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. Chris Hartman, Director of Louisville's Fairness Campaign and Steering Committee member of Kentucky's Statewide Fairness Coalition. Sam Markison, Associate Professor of Law, Brandeis School of Law at the University of Louisville. And talking about the Judge Nance effort to recuse himself from cases involving same-sex couples, adoption cases. Another issue, another distinction that I had heard on this issue of recusing himself, is it possible, and Sam, you're the legal expert, was there a concern that to recuse oneself from a specific class of cases is different than a judge normally recusing himself because the person is this neighbor or a relative or there's some other circumstance on a very specific case.
That's exactly right. Recusal is a device that is meant to deal with situations in which a judge has a particular need that is case-specific because the judge knows one of the parties has an ongoing relationship or a past relationship with one of the parties to the case, a relative, etc. And you don't want, obviously, a judge to be sitting on that case because the other party to the case, the opposing party, understandably feels that the judge cannot be impartial and would feel that they're not getting a fair shake from the justice system. But there's no reason in that case, when recusal is invoked, for anyone to feel that the judge going forward, as a general matter, will be biased as to a whole class of cases. What Judge Nance has done here is to use recusal, which is meant to be case specific, in a way it's not intended to be used, and which does call into question, as Chris said earlier, his ability to be unbiased as to a whole class of people. And that is a violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct. And clear cut, there's a case from Nebraska in which a judge who did the exact same thing was found to have been in violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct in that state because its recusal is simply not enough. Recusal is not the right remedy when a judge can't be biased. And if I could, I did want to respond to the point that somehow there's a right of conscience embedded in the Kentucky Constitution that protects Judge Nance. Rights are held by private citizens so that government can't violate them. Government is the violator or the potential violator, and that's why we have constitutional rights to protect us when government acts, because government is the potential encroacher on our rights as private individuals.
And you're saying the judge is government.
A judge is
government.
An agent of government. Okay. So in his capacity as a judge, Judge Nance doesn't hold that right of conscience that the Kentucky Constitution protects. He does as an individual, as a private citizen. But here he's acting as a judge. And when he's acting in that capacity, he can't invoke that shield against the government.
Let me get to Richard here in a second. But couldn't one argue that Judge Nance is doing a favor to the same-sex couples who may come before him for adoption, because it's right up front, he's not going to interfere. Is anything he's doing keeping someone from adopting a child or going to affect the ability to adopt in those counties?
Well, let me say, folks already know that Judge Nance has recused himself from one case involving an LGBT person before him in a non-adoption case. This is a domestic violence case. So again, this is a whole cross-section of cases now that he cannot take. Judge Alexander cannot take up all of his slack. They're the only two family court judges there. So at the end of the day, if he cannot do the job, he shouldn't be in the position.
But the issue would be that it's going to delay adoption processes for people who have a
right. And if the other judge
to
can't do it, then, or if he were the only judge, couples would have an undue burden to go to neighboring counties. But if judges there prohibit, you know, where does the buck stop? Where this undue burden that's just specific to LGBT folks gets exercised by all sorts of folks.
Okay, Richard,
John, as I understand it, though, there are only a couple of cases that Judge Nance has handled in the past regarding gay adoption. And he came to a place in his life where he said, I can no longer do this. There is another judge that has agreed to take those. There is another judge who will take those cases. And I don't see where the harm is. Now, I understand, Sam, about the Code of Judicial Conduct. But I'm wondering, should he be fired? Are you suggesting that judges that have a conviction that marriage should be between a man and a woman and that children do best in a married two-parent heterosexual family, are you saying that they shouldn't be judges, the people with those convictions anymore? And then the question is, if it's a yes, then how far do we take that in our society? Do people that hold those views just no longer enter public life anymore?
Well, first of all, people who hold those views don't all take them to the extreme that Judge Nance does. Some people who hold those views are willing to nevertheless apply the law. Judges all the time understand that their responsibility as, for example, a lower court judge is to apply the law the precedent that has been handed down to them by higher courts. By the Supreme Court decides a case, a lower court judge has to apply that law even if they disagree with it. So what we're talking about here is only a subset of the judges that you just posited. We're talking only about those judges who not only feel that, quite against the evidence, that same-sex parents can't make same-sex couples, gay and lesbian people can't make wonderful parents, but who take that belief to such an extreme that they couldn't even in good conscience apply the law. And there are many examples from history of people of conscience resigning from public office because they cannot apply the law that the office they hold. We go all the way back to Thomas More. I mean, this is not a new concept, that public office often imposes upon you responsibilities that are in conflict with the response with the demands of conscience, and it is an honorable estate to then sacrifice that office because of the demands of conscience.
Sam Markeson is here with us. Richard Nelson, Chris Hartman. This is Eastern Standard. We are talking about LGBT legal issues on this week's program. And we're live on Thursday morning. You're welcome to get involved with your questions, your comments, your personal stories. Speaking at the moment about Judge Nance out of Glasgow and his recusing himself from handling adoption cases involving same-sex couples. 800-621-8890 is the phone number. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. We would recommend on Sunday night the repeat of the program. You can post your comments on the Facebook page or the WEKU website. Let me take this conversation another direction. We're talking about a public official choosing that they are making choices or because of their beliefs unable or purportedly unable to do their job. Let's go back to the Kim Davis case that's now almost 2 years ago when all this occurred in Rowan County, refusing to issue marriage licenses because of the Supreme Court decision making same-sex marriage legal across the country. Where does all of that stand? And I know there's that current case of the suit for damages.
So this one case that's still going for damages, that's sort of the death rattle of the Kim Davis legal debacle.
But would we say, for instance, that Kim Davis, and that there were arguments being made that she should not be in that job because she couldn't carry out the job as done, then the state General Assembly changed the rules.
Yeah, at a point in time, that was true. She could not do the job as was required by law, and at that point, she should have resigned. What happened, however, was that the law changed, and that's the appropriate way for something like this to happen.
Are we happy with the changes?
Yes.
You're happy with those changes?
Believe it
Chris?
Or not, this is one of the rare instances where I can say a piece of legislation passed unanimously in both chambers of the Kentucky General Assembly and was signed into law by Governor Matt Bevin that was supported by not just the Fairness Campaign and the ACLU of Kentucky, but also Kim Davis. We all agreed on the marriage license solution to create one singular marriage license that didn't include a signature from county clerks. And at that point in time, you know, Kim Davis was certainly, you know, got what she wanted, but everybody got what they wanted because same-sex couples can get marriage licenses in Kentucky now and county clerks do not have to sign them.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that was a good solution. That's something that former Governor Steve Beshear could have implemented when he was still in office. But one of the concerns I have, though, Chris, on this issue is the cultural tide has changed. Gay marriage is the law of the land, according to what the Supreme Court says. But that hasn't been achieved by the democratic process. The people in 30-some states, 31 states, amended their constitutions to keep marriage between a man and a woman and essentially had a 5-4 ruling at the Supreme Court level that struck those constitutional amendments down. And I think in order, we talked about law. You know, where does law come from? At what point do people have a right to appeal to conscience and live according to their convictions? Just because a court hands something down doesn't make it right. Our Supreme Court has been wrong a number of times. I think for the good of the country, it's much better to work. These issues are much better to work their way through the democratic process
and
to be debated like we are right now in the court of on a public radio station, and then to let the court of public opinion weigh in. Because what's happening, and this is my point, people will not embrace that top-down, mandated, very narrow ruling on a very divisive issue.
And
I think you're going to have more cases like Kim Davis and more cases like Judge Nance where people don't agree with that imposition?
I think we're going to have fewer and fewer of them. Richard's espousing the argument of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling in the Bashir, in the Love v. Bashir and Burke v. Bashir marriage equality cases, which is that this really should go before the public. The public should be voting on it. We know historically, nobody can refute that every time a minority's rights are put up to a majority vote, we lose. It's an inappropriate thing to do. It's why the judiciary exists, is to ensure fairness and justice for all, because the electorate has never granted civil rights to marginalized populations.
I might also add that there is a little bit of an irony, Richard, in you saying that we should let the democratic process work, when earlier in defense of Judge Nance, you cited a constitutional protection that would presumably, if we bought that argument, would be one that he would be able to invoke by in a court in order to block any action taken against him, since it would be a constitutional right that would be enforceable in court. So you seem to be a little bit trying to have it both ways.
But Sam, the state constitution went through the process, and it was approved by the legislature.
So did the Equal Protection Clause of the federal constitution, and therefore has the same democratic legitimacy when enforced by a court. I mean, sauce for the goose.
There is a difference between a court ruling and then a constitution that went through the process that the legislature voted on. In the Declaration of Independence, let's go back to that. We have a government by the consent of the governed. We are the ones who came together and with this great idea of the idea that God created us, that our rights and our liberties come from Him, and the purpose of government is to secure our inalienable rights, that government should be limited.
Do you know what bothers me so much about this, and what is so offensive about this to me, is that nobody's talking about the children. We've got nearly 2,000 adoptable Kentucky children right now who want loving forever homes. 33% of LGBTQ couples who are living in Kentucky are raising children right now. What you all are seeking to do is deny loving homes for Kentucky's adoptable children, and knowing that the governor has set it as a priority to fix the foster and adoption care system in the state, how dare we do anything that would prohibit or hinder loving couples and individuals from adopting Kentucky's children in need?
Well, this is not stopping. Chris, there are kids who need adoption, but this is an argument over what are the best households for children. And I think
the
we can have
the loving ones that can support them and that are based on social science and research. The Regnera study that you touted earlier has been debunked by every major study and individual out there that knows anything. The American Association of Pediatrics, the Psychological Association. How dare you say that Regnera's one study is somehow trumps the objective opinions of medical and psychological professionals for the past three decades?
Well, you know, one of the things we did a couple of weeks ago here at WEKU is we did a story based on in Fayette County to find out where things stood in terms of same-sex adoption in Lexington and Fayette County. And we used a soundbite from Judge Masterton, I believe, of family court judge in Fayette County, who said that they'd be in big trouble in Fayette County if there was no possibility of placing children in the same-sex homes. Richard, how do you feel about that? I mean, is there not evidence that placement of children in same-sex homes has been successful and has been provided a social good?
Yeah, I'm not aware of studies here in Kentucky that addresses that. The Regnera study, which Chris is very quick to dismiss, was a good study. And the reason why it was criticized, Chris, was because it went against the cultural current. If you speak out publicly on this issue, if you say that marriage should be between a man and a woman and that children do deserve a mother and a father to raise them, that goes against the grain. And you will see the institutions and much of the media today go against that. So, no, it's not popular to speak on this issue. But I think that it's important that we have the right, first of all, to talk about it and the right to dissent. And I think that's what we're—
All the while, children are being denied loving homes.
I don't think nobody's being denied a loving home. In the case with Judge Mitchell Nance, there's another judge that is handling that adoption case.
Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say all Judge Nance is achieving is to shift the adoptions to another judge, so no harm, no foul, and yet he's achieving something because these homes are not he's achieving something because these homes are not homes that ought to be the subject of adoption. You either stand for the principles he's espousing and think these shouldn't be the subjects of adoptions, or you don't.
Well, Sam, I think that there are two goods that are accomplished here. One is that he can do his job according to his conscience. You disagree with that. I understand that. But then also the needs of that adoptive couple are met. They're able to go to another judge to have
those are bad adoptions that shouldn't be happening in your view.
I don't think that's ideal and best for the children. That is my view. That, you know, we all come from a biological mother and father, and the ideal case is that they raise us. I know that in the case of kids in foster care, that hasn't happened. Something bad has happened in their lives for whatever reason. But I think to argue that children do best in a married two-parent family, that's a reasonable argument.
Richard, all of the social science contradicts exactly what you have just said. And if you want to continue to blindly ignore the opinions of professionals, again, pediatricians, psychologists, sociologists, every one of the professional organizations of all of these individuals have said that children do just as well in LGBT households as they do in others.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that social science,
Chris.
There's a lot of it that's politically motivated.
We received an email from a listener named Simeon who sent a link to a study, Parenting and Child Development in Adoptive Families, Does Parental Sexual Orientation Matter? And this was a study done at the University of Virginia, investigated child development and parenting in 106 families headed by 27 lesbian, 29 gay, and 50 heterosexual couples. And I think the bottom line is that there was no evidence of any negative consequences of being in same-sex.
And virtually every other study that's been done, save for the debunked Regnerus study, which is what Richard puts all of his arguments on, have said the exact same thing.
Let's argue from common sense, though, Chris. There are two parts of humanity.
If we can't use evidence, let's use something else, because evidence is not good enough.
It's not. And I don't.
It's not, says Richard.
This is what's not good enough. Politically motivated research.
This is not politically motivated. Is this politically motivated?
We need to take a break. Let's come back. And we're talking about this issue of Judge Nance recusing himself from participating in same-sex adoption cases. And we can talk about other legal issues affecting the LGBT community in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. 800-621-8890. We'd love to get you on the air. Thank you for Simeon for sending an email. If you'd like to be involved in the show, send us a tweet at WEKUEST or pick up the phone and call with your question, your comment, or your personal story. You have an experience of same-sex couple caring and adopting children, a success story, or anything else you'd like to share with us. 800-621-8890. We'll be right back. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsberg, and we're talking about the legal issues involving LGBT persons in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center, with us. Chris Hartman, Director of Louisville's Fairness Campaign and Steering Committee member of the Kentucky Statewide Fairness Coalition. Sam Markison, Professor, Associate Professor of Law at Brandeis School of Law at the University of Louisville, teaches, among other subjects, employment discrimination, constitutional law, and disability law. I want to once again reiterate that regarding the case of Judge Nance out of Glasgow, that we reached out to his office, and I know other media have attempted to contact him on this case of his recusing himself from adoption cases involving same-sex couples. Judge Nance told our producer that his office said Judge Nance has no comment at this time. So we did reach out and would be glad if Judge Nance were listening and would like to call in and be part of the program. He's certainly welcome to do so. We are here, and it's an interactive show on Thursday morning, so please feel free to call in with your question at 800-621-8890, your question or your comment. Richard Nelson reminded me during the break of the case involving the Hands-On Originals, the print shop in Lexington. And this was which year was Pride in Lexington? Was it
2014?
They chose
in 2012.
That sounds right. Okay, they turned down an order for T-shirts for Lexington pride, and that went to court. Can you, Chris, tell me to the background how that occurred?
Yeah, so the T-shirt maker decided that they did not want to print any shirts that might be used for an LGBT organization, you know, and a complaint was filed against them under Lexington's Fairness Ordinance. The city of Lexington, or the Lexington Fayette Urban County Human Relations Commission, found in favor of the folks who were denied service by Hands On Original. And now it's been sort of going up the chain. A Kentucky Court of Appeals has overturned that original ruling, or actually upheld a lower court's ruling overturning the decision that they violated the Fairness Ordinance. You know, that's why there is a process to go through to determine, you know, at the end of the day, did discrimination against LGBT folks happen? And I think it is clear that Hands On Original, what we know now, has a clear position of anti-LGBT sentiment. And so now everybody in Lexington can know that Hands On Original will not print T-shirts that or serve, really, LGBT customers in a way that honors their identity.
Well, Chris, I don't think that's a fair characterization. I know Blaine Adamson. I've talked with him about this. And his conviction and what this case amounted to was him being forced by law, by the Fairness Ordinance, to promote a message that he disagreed with. Even though Blaine Adamson was going to help the LGBT community find another provider at the same price, same quality, that community wanted him to do it in violation of his conscience. And I think that there's an inconsistency here, because if there was a LGBT print shop that was asked by somebody from the Westboro Baptist Church to print T-shirts that say whatever vulgar statement they have,
was it
I think that they have
they
every right. They have every right to decline that.
What did they want to put on the T-shirts?
It was
they wanted to put the number 5 and 6 different colors.
And Chris, the court found that he was within his rights, his First Amendment rights, to decline conveying that message.
That's not quite what the court found. The court, because the court didn't rule on First Amendment grounds, the court of appeals did some weird things here, among them not having any majority opinion, which was a little bit unusual, not unheard of, but a little unusual.
Can there be a ruling without a majority?
Because the three different opinions, three different judges, each wrote a different opinion. Oh. They each wrote a separate opinion.
But they all went the one direction.
It was two to one. And one judge concurred without joining what was styled as the majority opinion. So you had a little bit of an unusual situation. And I actually, strangely enough, perhaps Richard, you may want to hold on to your chair. I actually don't have any problem with the outcome here. I do think the reasoning was a little off.
I was wondering about that from a legal point of view. Can't a business turn down any business could come to their door?
Well, they can't. They, you know, as a place of public accommodation, they're subject to non-discrimination laws, like, you know, the federal non-discrimination law requires businesses not to discriminate on the basis of sex and race, et cetera. And the Fairness Ordinance here applies, but it is circumscribed by the First Amendment. And I think a stronger reasoning for the decision here by the Court of Appeals would have been a straightforward application of free speech principles, that while a business in general can be required to not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, that because of the particular kind of business that Hands On Original is engaged in, that it involved a communicative aspect, that is producing a message on these T-shirts, that having to communicate a message in the service they were providing would have involved some pretty important First Amendment free speech principles, that the Fairness Ordinance can't be applied in that particular way. Doesn't mean that the next business that comes along could do what Hands On Original wanted to do if it didn't involve speech, if it didn't involve communicative conduct. But and then we'll worry about the Fairness Ordinance the next time in the next kind of business. But I think that would have been a better way for the Court of Appeals to do the analysis. But I think the outcome here made a lot of sense and is a way to sort of balance free speech concerns with an existing Fairness Ordinance or any other kind of non-discrimination law.
Any sense of where that's going to go in the future?
Well, it's been this particular case, The Human Relations Commission has asked the Kentucky Supreme Court for discretionary review. Now, as that name implies, the Kentucky Supreme Court has the choice whether to take the case for review, and we'll have to see whether they're going to do that. Ultimately, as with many other states that have had to look at the way, the best way in which to balance their non-discrimination laws, including sexual orientation non-discrimination laws, but not limited to that, have to balance those against First Amendment rights. Kentucky will have to get that balance right, and I think we will. This is just one step in that process.
Sam Markison is here with us, Chris Hartman and Richard Nelson. We're talking about LGBT legal issues on this week's Eastern Standard. This is an interactive show. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. We're going to go to the phone in just a moment and talk to Joe from Lexington. Let me acknowledge this email from Joey, and I'm not going to read the entire thing, but basically Joey's point is same-sex parents are not parents. They are an unnatural, hedonistic abomination. We have 4.2 million Kentuckians that all live here and breathe the same air. Debasement and adulteration of the family is a recipe for cultural disaster. Thank you, Joey, for giving us that comment.
And that's the type of comment which leads to the high suicide rates amongst LGBTQ youth. One-third of LGBTQ youth have attempted suicide. This is exactly the type of sentiment that drives them to it.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Joe from Lexington. Joe, thank you for being on the line. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. I just want to call and talk about, like, I guess, the adoption process that you guys were talking about a second ago. I am married to a man. I'm a part of a same-sex couple. We don't have any children, but I have two friends that are going through the adoption process right now. They're a heterosexual couple. And just, like, having to watch all the work that they're doing and how hard it is to even become an adoptive parent or a foster parent, like, that would make me feel like, you know, the people that are trying, these same-sex couples that are trying to adopt, you know, they mean it. It's not, they're not trying to, I don't.
Do something bad to the children? You're not.
Yeah, I mean, like, because it's a lot of work. I mean, why would you do that much work if you had, like, negative intentions? And I'm just seeing the obstacles they're going through and just kind of wondering
what's at issue here?
What's this real argument about? I mean, is it
Judge Nance's 15 minutes of fame?
Well, I would respond to that. I think that's a great point, that it brings up the stereotype that's involved in Judge Nance's position. The adoption process that is so rigorous, and couples or single parent adoptions are the adoptive parents are put through such a rigorous examination of their past, the household, everything about them is looked at so closely that to just make a blanket assumption about that they're unqualified, that they cannot provide an adequate household because of one characteristic, in this case their sexual orientation, shows, I think, very clearly that Judge Nance is acting on the basis of stereotype, and that is one more reason why he violated the Code of Judicial Conduct, because you're not allowed to act on stereotypes like that.
Let me ask Richard to respond.
Yeah, Sam, I think, again, you can look beyond – you're couching this as a stereotype. I would say let's look at it to what is the best arrangement for children. And throughout – history, we have always acknowledged that kids need a mother and a father.
Richard, that is the best situation.
That is the best. That is the best situation. Women are different than men. Women have different strengths than men. Men have different strengths than women. These two parts of humanity. Look, Chris, can I finish? I've given you plenty of time. Thank you. These two parts of humanity come together, and they build up that child. They breathe into that child. They mentor that child. My wife and I have four children, and she parents in a different way than I do. Her form of discipline is different than mine. Are those bad things? No,
next,
they're
Richard's
different.
Tell
they're
us different. Who belongs in the kitchen and who belongs at work.
Chris,
Richard,
let me finish
so
my
antiquated.
Chris.
It flies in the face of all the research, Richard. And if you can't shore yourself up with evidence. And research, then I don't know how to win an argument.
Is there any
with
research
you.
That compares children who are raised in households of two dads versus two moms?
There Two dads versus two moms?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's the same.
You know what's interesting?
It's negligible.
Let me talk, John, I do want to talk a little bit about the research.
Couples.
The climate on our many of our college campuses today are very much intolerant towards views like mine. And to think that a sociology professor, a psychology professor is going to do some research that supports the traditional definition of marriage and research that says that kids do best in a married parent, two-parent heterosexual household, and if they want to keep their job, that's not happening.
First,
it's
the research doesn't exist.
Of the intolerance, Chris. It's because of the intolerance.
Let's go back to listener comments. I have a couple of emails we can acknowledge, and if you'd like to get on the line, there's time for at least one more call at 800-621-8890. Seth wrote to us, I think we can all agree that in most cases the, quote, ideal situation for most children is to live in a home with their married biological parents. I don't think that is debatable. However, this ideal situation isn't an option for a lot of children. I would like to ask your guests, do they believe a child being raised in a loving married gay home have a better chance at becoming a successful member of society than a child who grows up in the Kentucky foster system?
Oh, undeniably. And what the research also shows is that children do better in a household with two loving parents. The gender is irrelevant, but it is true that two loving parents do typically yield a better outcome. That's what the studies show.
Well, no matter their gender.
And Chris, that's where you and I disagree, because gender is absolutely relevant.
Disagree with the research.
Men and women are different.
I would like to hear his answer to the question that the listener asked. Do you think that a child raised by two loving same-sex partners, spouses, is better off than a child raised in foster care?
Yeah, I think, Sam, that's a false choice, because there are plenty
of... So you're not going to answer
the
question.
There are plenty of heterosexual...
Couple. There's a huge shortage of adoptive parents, adoptive parents.
According to the Regeneris study, those kids They would do better off with a single person raising them than in a homosexual household raising them.
You are absolutely wrong.
Let's go back to the phone. We have Brandon from Lexington waiting to speak. Brandon, thank you for calling. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment about the email that was received earlier from the other commentator. I live in Lexington now, but I'm from a small town in Clay County. And pretending like, you know, gay people don't exist in those parts of Kentucky is ridiculous. And, you know, the idea that gay couples are inherently hedonistic and unnatural is just idiotic. And I would also like to comment on the fact that one of your guests there is saying that you have to have a woman in a couple that's raising a child, that, you know, genders are inherently raised children differently. I just would ask, do you think then that a lesbian couple would be better equipped to raise a child than two gay men? Thanks.
That was kind of the question I was asking.
So let me read directly from the official journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, a comprehensive review of the experiences of gay and lesbian parents and their children reaffirmed that most children raised by lesbian and gay parents are developmentally and socially well-adjusted, and that the societal presence of stigma is what's the problem. No differences were found in maternal warmth, emotional involvement, enjoyment of motherhood, frequency of conflict, supervision of the child, abnormal behaviors, etc., in LGBT households. This is coming again from the American Academy of Pediatrics. How can we argue with the experts?
It's politicized, Chris. That's how you can argue, because it's politically motivated.
Let me come back
to a
couple more comments from listeners, as we invite our listeners to be part of the show. I mean, this listener, Damien, wrote, I'd just like to publicly state my belief practicing heterosexuals, specifically those who ascribe to the so-called truth of religion, specifically Christianity, contain some of the worst people I've ever had the displeasure of being offended with their lifestyle choices. How does this not make sense? My conscience, if I were a judge, would it be within my rights to deny this group of people access to my court in the case of adoption? Also, another message, this one came from Sean by Facebook message. Jesus in the New Testament is all about love. My Episcopal Church focuses on that. We must love the unloved, the poor, and the sick. Hatred for the LGBT community is not Christ-like.
If I could answer,
and I agree with that, John. By the way, I think that hatred towards any person or group is not Christ-like, and I think that I can uphold Chris's and Sam's dignity and be respectful towards them, and at the same time disagree with them on some very important issues. And I hope that's what the listeners are hearing today, a respectful conversation on a very important issue.
As to the question of can you keep the Christians out of your court or deny them adoption, the answer is no. But you could keep specific Christians out if they don't have the qualities that are required to be an adoptive parent. You have to judge each litigant who comes before you as an individual. That's what the Code of Judicial Conduct requires.
Let me thank Amanda for calling, but we're not going to get a chance to get her on the air. Amanda from Richmond says she doesn't think sexual orientation should be considered, and there's over 8,000 kids that need a home. Let's wrap up our conversation, and specifically we've been talking about this issue of adoption and Judge Nance. What's going to happen next there? Is the judge going to stay in office? Is there a proceeding that could remove him from office?
The complaint has been filed. The Judicial Conduct Commission will proceed in very deep secrecy, and it will issue a ruling that could be anywhere from a sanction to, they could find no violation, all the way up to removal from office.
And now, Richard, is your group, the Commonwealth Policy Center, involved in this case in some fashion?
Well, I've commented on it, and we're very supportive of Judge Nance's position, and I think that whether you're a judge, a teacher, in the public arena, should be able to do their job according to their convictions. And I think if we, as a society, we should uphold the rights of conscience, uphold the rights of religious freedom.
We are out of time. Okay. Richard Nelson of the Commonwealth Policy Center, Chris Hartman of the Fairness Campaign and Kentucky Statewide Fairness Coalition, Sam Markison, Associate Professor of Law, Brandeis School of Law. Thank you all for being with us.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks, John.
Our program will be online as a podcast later today and will be repeated Sunday evening at 6 on WEKU, a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers are Devonna Gaines, Zach Redding, and Julia Dake. Our technical director today, Sherry Lawson. You can write to us at any time, WEKU, easternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thank you for joining us for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Visit us online, weku.fm.